Hello. It's the one but last day of the Privacy Week. Hi from Vienna. And now we have a talk which has been pre-recorded for, time reasons, which is fitting for 2020, but also to have it be 2020. Fenner and Jinx together also are in the breaking room later. So what's that about? So 1984 passed straight right into the brave new world. Sorry, all those bats. Passing 1984 on the right side into the brave new world. So it's about dystopia, brave new world, 1984. We wish you a lot of fun and interesting time after those 45 minutes. See you then. Yeah, well, hi and welcome. I have here with me today in this stream Fenner Williams. Hi, Fenner. Hi, good evening. Fenner, so you're here today, or maybe let's start. So we're here two people. It wouldn't be 2020 if there are no surprises. Actually, we should be four people here. Also, there should be Richard and Quentin from the Orwell Society should be here. But unfortunately, this didn't happen and wasn't possible. But at least Fenner, it was able to join, so we do this pre-recording today. Yes, I'm happy to take part to the PCT, because usually I am very interested in what you're doing and follow it. So great. So greetings to the Orwell Society. Thanks. They will definitely watch it from remotely. They won't understand anything, but they will be happy. Oh yeah, we have translations. So hi from the two, if you're from the Orwell Society. So yes, so here are translators who are currently translating at least German to English and English to German, so that this is at least understandable for English and German speakers. We know each other as authors. And you're also part of the Orwell Society. Yeah, let's say I'm the representative of the Orwell Society in Germany, in the German-speaking countries. If you have any questions which may come later, which can also be like in writing, all of those questions can be done by www.fenner-williams.com, so you can send us questions there. So you can clearly reach me there. I'll definitely answer all of them, I swear, but definitely not within 10 seconds. Let's start a bit. So I'm interested in utopias and dystopias very early on, and I actually like really read everything in this area, from the first utopian novel that exists. I can gladly talk about that later. Also wrote my thesis about that. So. And I found out that the ones I liked most, or which I considered the closest to me, in the way I hope I never have to live in this kind of condition and in this lifestyle. So, and I think George Orwell and Aldous Huxley were the ones I really that really got into me. So 1984 is just the one. Work in the utopian literature, dystopian literature, and then at some point I thought, try to find out where this book was written, who wrote this book, what kind of person was it, why did he write this book? And I had to went to a lonely island in Scotland, which is called Jura, and on this very lonely island in the west of Scotland, if there's just one street for 30 miles to the north, when you go there, at some point you see that from this point onwards you have to walk by foot and you're on private property, and from there it's 7 more miles foot walk until you come to a singular farmhouse which is called Farm Hill. And this one singular place, this is the place where George Orwell wrote 1984, only with his son Richard, who actually should be here as well today. He's not as little by now, but he's still rather young. Well, and there in one part of the building, he created the world we know with 1984. So you're not allowed to go there, and this is, and I told them so how sad I am about that, and I said, well, come on, we know the son of George Orwell, so we'll just ask him. Well, yes, I said, of course, it's total, well, I wouldn't choose like just simply asking, but yeah, still they did this. The Orwell Society and Richard contacted me. And less than 11 months later, I stood with him in this house and could ask him a lot of stuff. And by now, after many, many years, we're good friends, do a lot of stuff together, which George Orwell are like honor his works. Like, for example, last year, we went on the traces of George Orwell in Spain. Yeah, very nice. Tell me, you talked about utopias. Today, usually this sounds a bit strange and irritating because rather we're talking about the opposite of we're talking about dystopias. But I'm also stumbled upon that Brave New World 1931 was published as Utopia, as a utopian novel. And then I was like, "Huh, was a bit weird. So how do you think this could be a positive utopian stuff?" Of course, it ain't. No, it's not. At the moment, we don't like something, so we don't feel comfortable. It's no longer good, and so this is where utopias are not good for us, or we don't feel. But this is the reason is that the first novel of this kind was wrote in the time of Thomas VIII, who was first beheaded and then sacrificed. He wrote a book called Utopia, and in this book he created a world which he thought that under Henry VIII. And if you look at that, it's so modern that when you read it, you're like, boys and girls are educated together. Education leads to people who can vote for the right people. Okay, sorry, he was canonized, this guy. And so this really fits into 1984 and Brave New World. If anyone suppresses anyone else to get their own interests done or published. So the first novels were all called utopias, but at some point in the 70s, the literature science said, if it's not nice, it can't be, if it's not beautiful, it can't be called utopia, we have to call it dystopia. So, but basically this is about to write about something. It can also be a poem, it doesn't have to be a book or a novel or whatever. So, which is about something that you personally think you don't want to be, something you're not forced to do something, and that you can, and that you don't want, that you want to be free and you don't want to just obey. Okay. So maybe we're just already, we just hit our society of today. So one question, I got one question which was sent to me before this talk. It's about 1984. So we have like the opposite So we have this socialist unity society, which is like surveillance state, very streamlined everything. And their biggest enemy were capitalism before, which came before them. So where they are talking about, the communists had to bow to men with cylinders heads. So now we just somehow did to combine that in general to like have both, but with the twist that our civilian society is just half is done only half by the state and especially but by capitalism and companies and businesses, so they surveil and not just the state. And so the question about that was, what would have George Orwell have said about that? Well, funnily enough, you see, we just had a discussion about that in the George Orwell Society. The book has been written especially against totalitarian regimes, but at the same time, he wrote about essays where he clearly indicated that you need people who have no principles. The more people you have with principles and with ethics, the harder it is to suppress them. Of course, if you do with this with violence, it's easier. So, like a tank will always win against a single human, that will never be a problem. But for example, we see it in Belarus. So the more people go on the streets and the more publicity and looks at this in a positive way, the harder it is to respond with violence. The idea behind such utopias, I think, utopias like 1984, is very sure that it says it is also you, it's also because of you. It's also because you stand there and say, wait a second. This person telling me in a limousine going round of around a hospital and tell us you don't have to care. This is a school where you can learn. This person tells me that what I myself can learn by myself and my education, that this is not as important. And I would always put a question mark behind that. But this is what George Orwell did and also Aldous Huxley. So other people like Kallenbach or Ray Bradbury did this with what they have written.
Do you want to continue talking about that? Ray Bradbury or the others? A utopianist? Utopists? Yeah, I would love to hear more about that. And I think all of the people watching, especially in 2020, maybe some good vibes would do good. A pep talk from history. Yeah, there are utopias that have been written in recent years. I think in Germany we have one from 1975 or 1976 from Ernest Kallenbach, who actually wrote about the US dividing because of a president who denied climate change when that wasn't even known, and who wants atomic power and the west of the US separated from the east and elected a female president. And the book is called Utopia, and it describes the difference between people who say consumerism isn't everything and we shouldn't waste our climate and all of this won't make us happy. And a reporter from the normal US then travels to this utopia of the West and he learns what it's like to live in a different kind of state where we also have technology, but no private cars, for example, but where resources are shared in a way that people share them. And that sounds so modern that we would think it was written in 2020, but it was not. And if you're looking at that today, you might even get some ideas or inspiration. Another person, Edward Bellamy, wrote a book in 1887 called Looking Back to 2000. And that is so modern, you wouldn't even believe it. And from a time, at the time it was very well received. And it was even translated into German by Clara Zetkin. And he held talks all over the world where he said that if we use technology, we have to be very careful to make it useful for humans, not to create commodity, but to educate people and to make them better. For example, he was already talking about telephones with imagery, and he was talking about a room in every house where you can put on headphone, where you're automatically in a concert hall. And he was talking about stereo sound. And he said that if you consume entertainment in such a way, that's fine, but you have to give back somehow. You have to make sure that you educate yourself in a way that allows you to participate in this. And that is such a modern idea or concept, and especially in all utopias I know. And I'm sure I don't know all of them. It always says that only people who use commodities are people who can be governed. And it's not just about people liking the government, but it's about becoming too comfortable. And that is what, using technologies like WhatsApp, I don't think George Orwell would have used WhatsApp. Because he would have believed that that was an app that would govern him without his agency. I think that is a concept that we have lost as a society, don't you think? Because we grew up with commodities and entertainment and colorful screens. And to reflect on that, to question that, isn't really encouraged. I think it's interesting that you're saying that, because I always believe that people do that because it's free. People just try out things that are free because, well, they're free. And that leads them to accept the level of comfort and to want to continue to have it. But I also agree with you that we kind of grew up with that notion. I have to say, I'm from a different generation than you. I'm so much older, just a little bit. But it's decisive, because my first 30 years were without MacBooks. I sat in front of a MacBook the first time in 1987 for university. And if I'd sat in front of a smartphone screen at 10 years old, I think I would have a different relationship with the technology. And I think that the current generation, and I'm a bit jealous, that with all the technology they grew up with, they have a much better and much more relaxed approach to these kind of technologies, because, well, we're kind of wary of these technologies, but we're not as laid back, as relaxed about them. I don't think that there's a contradiction, because older generations or people just a few years ago who say, well, it's free, let's try that. But on the other hand, people who came later, who are younger, can profit from off the experiences of the others, and they use things that older people could recommend to them. So do you think there's kind of an imitation effect? Yeah. But that would be in the direction of Huxley, who in Brave New World and other utopias, for example, in Ireland, he describes that if many people do a thing, many people will copy it because they'll also want to profit from it. And in Brave New World, people have a family and always say, well, those above me, I'm glad that it's not me and those below me as well, but my group is doing just the right thing. And I think this is the world we're living in a little bit, unfortunately. And what we also have is consumerism, as you said before. Ending is better than mending. Just throw it out, buy a new one, and boost the system with that, drive the system. Consumerism isn't a new thing, and it isn't just us. But I think we have come to kind of new colonialism. I need a new smartphone, not me, but people need a new smartphone every 2 years. But we don't see these phones being manufactured in Chile or in the Atacama Desert. And that lithium mining is causing environmental issues there. And we're being preached to drive electronic cars, but what do they do with the batteries once they're broken? And maybe later they'll say, let's use hydrogen instead, but it's not good to fight fire with fire. But we've done so for thousands of years, so. And we can hope that at least a part of the world, which you can see in Fridays for Futures, dare to speak up. And I'm proud of this generation. I admire them. They're not silent. They're saying things like, this is our world, not yours. You're dying soon. I love that. And it's also about what you said about educating yourself. Inform yourself, read the reports, make your own conclusions. That we have this possibility, this is the difference to the dystopias that literature gives us. Well, each dystopia is always a product of its time. And who could read in times of Thomas Moros? Not many people. George Orwell, in his times, or in Huxley, the book was translated, and the same year it was prohibited. Who could read it? Who could, well, draw their conclusions from it in Germany, I mean, in East Germany. Still, those books are bestsellers, and since Trump, they've had top selling numbers. Those are the most sold books, the most sold new classic in the US. On the other hand, I think this is reassuring. If people start, because of the current events, people start educating themselves, reading. What can we learn from those who were there before us? And I think it's fascinating that exactly those books are becoming classics again. Well, George Orwell invented newspeak, and he said short words that are repeated again and again will become everyday expressions such as America first. They're becoming catchphrases such as fake news or alternative facts. You have to imagine these words. I saw them and I thought, that's it. Any lector would have crossed that out of your book. I don't think that's true. Of course, newspeak by George Orwell, if you remain in that, if you continue looking at that and look at how politicians in Germany refuse using gender appropriate language. It's almost the same as. No, that's the comfort level of old men who just don't want to admit that women are also relevant. Friedrich Merz, the German Chancellor candidate, when I was young, he voted against a law that would have made rape within marriage illegal, and now he wants to become the Chancellor of Germany.
All right, well,
I
let's
think
hope that.
Adenauer.
Sorry. Let's hope to change it with that Adenauer said no one can hinder you to get more intelligent. Yeah, but Adenauer has been may have been like he has been overthrown by his own arrogance. Well, he will yeah attempt try to do it. And this is what makes politics so interesting. Politics versus education, where all utopias always look at politics versus education. The more you educate people, the more you understand what happens in politics. And you suddenly see like fake grenades, and when they are thrown and you are in the middle of it, maybe you don't, but usually suddenly you start understanding and reflecting on this. So the more educated a country or a people is, the harder it is to be the harder it can be like convinced that it's the same. That's when the Big Brother says 2 and 2 is 5, that's good. No, because in this book it says a democracy, one of the most deep things of democracy is that I'm allowed to say 2 and 2 is 4. But then if I'm saying this is an alternative fact that 2 and 2 is 5, and I hear this one time and again, and at some point I will start believing that, or I just supersede it with my logic, because then I lose intelligent knowledge, because I substitute good knowledge. And as it's in the book, maybe they're like the history has been replaced as well, so all of history has been like adapted to what currently is accepted political view, and again and again and again, so like iteratively, so it's just changed all the time. So of course, yeah, exactly. So history has been like, how history has been written is changed, even like newspaper articles have been rewritten, and this is exactly where we just have to look at ourselves. We have a colonial history in Europe, and we have to act like we just went there and didn't take anything from them. The only thing we brought was education. No, but we have to reflect on that and reflect on what we did there, and like we should just give them their dignity back, to actually get our dignity as well. Because as you said, I just get dignity if I admit that I made a mistake. So no one can prohibit you from getting more intelligent. Well, I think especially education, or like realizing that you're in a privileged situation, is very important to understand, and to understand that others that you give others dignity, and to just by understanding, and then you can look at all the people at this on one level, so that you communicate with them that this possibility exists, that you can communicate on equal levels. Yeah, exactly. And this is where you can look at the gender, so like gender neutral languages. When I look at it's okay. It may be difficult at the beginning to say Pippi Langstrumpf shouldn't have like she's about a South Sea king and no longer a N-word king. And of course, maybe some people say that this is stupid. Yeah, but if you look at Astrid Lindgren, she just grew up in different times. But we can think about how it looks for people today. We just have to do one thing, and there I'm very I'm very much about the details here as linguist and author. It doesn't turn into censorship. I don't know if you checked during your research here, but for example, 1970, the publisher of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, without his knowledge and without mentioning it in the book or showing it in the book, or like, yeah, or no footnote or something, there were 75 places where they modernized the book. Aldous Huxley at some point realized that and said, well, what? You're not allowed to do that, so I want my book, because that's a kind of censorship which isn't allowed as well. So when I sit down and say, well, I want from this, for example, they didn't have to want to use the word reservat, because you know reservat and the US, so you don't use it. I mean, of course, that's ridiculous. And this is also censorship, of course. And especially it's something when the authors are still alive, or it's something you can actually like just discuss with them and talk to them and say and have a conversation about that. So okay, what about, so maybe today our society has changed, which of course is a good thing that it does in general, that we as a society develop. Yeah, but this is exactly where the difference is. So one time it's only the publisher done by some because of some political ideas, and at some other point it's from the middle of society, and this is something totally different. It doesn't mean that it has to be my opinion. It could also be, but like, yeah, they got me with this argument. But if it's about to show that we are a Republican publisher, or we are a XY kind of publisher, because if then it's censorship if we just do that, especially if you don't mention it and not even telling it the author, as in this case. Yeah, of course, which also is like very difficult, well, to be, to use a nice term. Yeah, especially in the George Orwell society, we just had a discussion about what happens now. What is happening now? So Orwell died in January 70 years ago, and the book is now, so, well, it's public. Yeah, it's now public, and by now you can find 1984 versions which are like freed, or which are like they're changed, and you can't do anything about that. So of course, yeah, internet doesn't forget. Oh, they are in the public domain. The book. So, Ben, for example, let's look about, you look 1984 from the network and read it, and it's not the original, and you think about it, I don't understand. Big Brother is watching you. It's nice, doesn't it look like that? So it's just taking care of me, because if it's so much changed, he's just watching me that nothing happens to me, then it's getting dangerous. And there it would be nice. Now we're back to the general thing with like public domain in 70 years. Maybe as a society we should talk about this. It's like, okay, yeah, there is the possibility for everyone to read the original version and to have it additionally, or maybe just a summary of the original versions. So, like, and original versions are a bit in the general library for accessible for everyone. And to show this to the world, so that people are not just can only see those two editions you find online. Yeah, most authors are dead by then, so unfortunately they can't do anything about that, so it's the publishers, and we can just hope that those publishers actually do that. It's, there's nothing against that they sell it for like $8.99, but currently this, at the same time, utopias and but also educational books like Brave New World, which are read in schools here, at least when I went to school. So there it is important that they are accessible in the original for everyone. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one here, where we are again at education. So to summarize, maybe, what we as a society need to not go into a dystopia is education, broad education for everyone. We need reflexation and critical questioning and critical thinking. And just the will to not the will to exploit each other. Yeah. So of course, when we now just continue as we're doing, the only solution is to do it together. So we have to learn to create contracts, which create how everyone manage, how everyone still gets water, gets energy. So what is currently happening with Brexit and stuff like that, this can't go on like this. I mean, there will be alternative facts. There have to be alternative facts that this can be, that is very important, that we can only do this together. And that is something we find just like in Ernst Kallesbach, Ökotopia, we find it greatly described here. And this is something which could be very helpful for us, and this feeling that if I give something, that we get away from this. When I spend something, I have something less, but that we get to the feeling that when I spend something, someone else also has so much that they can share with me. So, and this must become something like a societal philosophy, maybe. I don't know how it is with you, but here in Germany, it's unbearable sometimes. Yeah, well, there are some nice communities as well where this works and where it's held high, sharing is caring and stuff like that. But, well, looking at like the general public, it's like really hard. But one of the problems is that ending is better than mending, and we have this kind of stuff. So, and again, we're back to ecological thinking and ecology. So we can't just assume that we can go until the core of the earth and just destroy everything. But we will have to learn to live with our resources and with what our planet actually can handle, and that it's sufficient for us. And I think as a society, there's a lot necessary to get there. Clearly, there's a lot necessary, but we currently have a generation which takes this very seriously, which I think is very important. Myself, I'm realizing that also people of my age start thinking about this and reflecting about that, especially so suddenly you have a very heavy rainfalls. Oh, just a very short thing, 30 seconds short story. The possibility, many people earlier had this possibility. So my father actually could, in 1960s, he learned at school, by the way, even during your time, oil reservoirs will be done. So you have to think about something new in the 60s. So of course this happened in the, so those in the, which were known in the 60s were done at that point, but just by fracking and stuff, they found more oil. But so that means that actually already in the 60s in the school, people who learned like car mechanics in German were taught, you have to think of something to change that. Yeah, well, I can just say that I grew up in a farmhouse where it was clear from everything is so everything is used. So we did do everything separate. We had carless Sundays, not spend too much. And what was not we didn't have this feeling of I buy a T-shirt which I will wear once. This feeling didn't exist. So I also think that this is something which that, and then suddenly you can take everything, and only we can do this. So no one else can do this by chance. So, and also not everyone can do this. And so that we get to the point where we can see that it's totally okay this way, and better that we can actually see that we don't have to look down on people who do it differently, but we can actually copy it from them. This is lived utopia. And all authors who ever wrote something like Brave New World had on their minds, and that we can, so that we can create something that really lasts for long, like maybe our forests, or like clothing which is comfortable and which we can still wear for 10 years. Yeah, I totally agree. So, and so I think that this time span where we just spend too much in every direction, and I also mean too much stupidity. So that we can, that this time is totally over with each drought, with each heavy rain, and we have to do something. And this, I think this is the new next utopian attempt. Okay. Well, looking at the time, we are at the end of our talk. I think it's very sad currently, because I really enjoyed it here. To make a reality check, so which kind of utopias and dystopias we have from history and learn from them, so that we can talk about that. So thanks a lot, Hannah. You're welcome. I hope we'll see each other again. I hope so as well. And I know you told me, just like a small addition, you told me the where 1984 actually comes from. Would you share it with the audience? Yes, I can do so. So the first wife of George Orwell, which died very early, wrote a poem which said, end of the century 1984, and just in remembrance of her, he called this book 1984. It was just not 1948 exchanged. No, that was not the case. Thanks for that. So, great. Then I'll say goodbye to all the viewers here, and we'll hear each other soon again. Thanks. Bye.
That was a very fascinating talk with those two ladies. And I think that you'll be happy to discuss with us in the break room, which you can find below the live stream. And we're looking forward. That's it from my side. And our next talk will be by Mike Warren Lucas, a best-selling author, and he will read from his novel. So goodbye and see you. And goodbye from the translation team as well. Thank you for listening. This translation was provided to you by She's a Pirate and Dimmy R.